You're listening to Manx Radio, and I'm Judith Lay, welcoming you to the podcast of The Manx Sky at Night with Howard Parkin.
The Nation Station, Manx Radio.
Twinkle, twinkle, little star, how I wonder what you are.
We choose to go to the moon. We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other things. Not because they are easy, but because they are hard.
And that's the familiar music that tells us that once again it's time for us to welcome Howard Parkin into the studio for this month's edition of The Manx Sky at Night. Howard, fast am I?
Fast am I, Judith. It's great to be here again.
And the week's just flying by. And we've got the whole month of January now to look back on. So,
we have indeed.
In a stargazing term, what's it been like?
Quite good, quite good. We've had quite a few really good, clear nights. And as I've said repeatedly, and I'll say it no doubt again, this is the time of the year to do your stargazing. It goes dark early, and you've got this magnificent display of all the stars of winter, the ones of Orion and Gemini and Taurus, all these wonderful stars and constellations which really light up our sky, and we see them for much longer. So we have got great times. And what has helped, of course, is we've had some reasonable weather, and that always helps a lot, because when it's cloudy we can't see too many.
And the moon featuring quite heavily in amongst all this.
Yes, well, the moon is just drifting across beautifully. Of course, it's going through all these different constellations, through Taurus, through Gemini and so on. And you've got the brilliant planet Jupiter in there as well. So we've had some wonderful conjunctions where the moon has been close to Saturn in the west, and then Jupiter much further on in the southeast, and then drifting away further down. And then it's going to come back around again, because it's full again on the 1st of February. Jupiter is absolutely dominating our skies at the moment. The stars of winter, which I've just mentioned, there's about 12 of what we call first magnitude stars. They're the brightest stars you see with the naked eye. But Jupiter is much, much brighter than them. And it's nestling right in the constellation of Gemini, which is up from Orion. A lot of people know Orion with his stars of his belt. And up from there, on the left hand, upper left of Orion, you've got the brilliant Jupiter. And to its left, you've got two stars, the two stars of Gemini, Castor and Pollux, the two twins that make up the constellation of Gemini. And what is interesting is Jupiter is going backwards. It's actually going upwards. It's not, you wouldn't think it was going backwards. It's actually going upwards and backwards, if you know what I mean. And it's going to be doing that right through to the middle of March. So it doesn't take much to spot the difference from one night to the next. Only a few weeks ago, it seemed to be in line with those two stars. Now it's gone to the side, and it's going to make a nice little a square without one of the stars missing, if you know what I mean. And it's going to make that pattern, and it's going to be keep on doing that, just slowly but surely heading backwards. And then it will slow down, stop, and then go start going forward again. And this, as I think I've mentioned this before, this is the phenomenon of retrograde motion, which upset all the scientists all those years ago, until we understood that the Earth went round the sun. And that discovery, that realization that this was the facts of how the universe or the solar system works, that realization by Copernicus in 1543 gave rise to modern astronomy and so on. There was all sorts of weird and wonderful explanations as to how they went backwards, but obviously we now know it's purely the fact that the Earth is going faster on its orbit around the Sun. Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, all those outer planets are going slower, so we catch up with them and leave them behind, basically. Easy explanation.
If there was perfect stargazing weather every night, I think we would get all of these things fixed in our minds if we were seeing them all the time. It's having to retain that knowledge, and that's the challenge, isn't it?
That's a good point, because when you think back to ancient astronomy, the people who did the ancient astronomy, the ancient Greeks, Egyptians and people like that, there's not much. There is some records of ancient stargazing in the Northern Hemisphere, the Northern countries, like the Alemannic Europe, I should say, but there's not much, because, of course, they don't get the clear skies. But if you go to places like the Caribbean or Hawaii, or Mediterranean countries, they see the stars far more. They could make clean and clear observations and work out what was going on. And I always say, in science, it's wonderful. It doesn't matter if it's astronomy or any science. The thing is, you come up with a theory. You come up with a theory. It might be the Big Bang. It might be stars going backwards. It could be anything. You come up with a theory, and then what everyone else does is try to disprove your theory. And if the theory works and fits the facts and is then proved to be the case, then obviously it's accepted. But that's what they did. They made all these wonderful stories about the Earth was still and the sun went round the Earth, and it fitted the facts at the time. It wasn't until Copernicus went, hey, why are these stars, why are these planets going backwards? And it took 100 odd years for it to be proved that he was correct. And now, of course, it is. The other example I can give of that is the Big Bang. The Big Bang theory, which was basically discovered, if you like, by Edwin Hubble back in 1922. And that is still accepted as the origin of the universe. There's an awful lot going on at the moment that isn't fitting the observational facts about how the universe expands. But the Big Bang seems to be safe. That theory seems still to fit. I'm not saying it will last forever, the theory of the Big Bang, but the Hubble tension, which is a big thing in modern astrophysics at the moment, is driving a horse and cart through all the ideas of how we think the universe is working. And isn't it wonderful that we mere humans, little tiny humans on this planet in the solar system, which is massive, we can work all these things out. I think it's an incredible human ingenuity.
It is. It is a triumph of human ingenuity. But what I think is particularly exciting is for young people now to not feel that everything has been learned and known, that there is still so much. So if they want to go into science and engineering and all of these things, there is so much more that they will discover.
Oh, yes, then, well, certainly.
The greatest disservice we could do would be to let young people think that it's all been sorted out, actually. Yeah. You just need to learn what we've discovered. No, learn what we've discovered and then you and disprove then it.
Well, the whole point is you for every answer we get, there's probably 20 questions behind it, and so on. And this has always been the way, and this is human ingenuity for you. But credit for the engineers. It's the engineers I always feel for, because I'm an astronomer. I would like to build a big telescope and put it up in space, and I want to make the mirror that folds out. OK, says the engineer. When do you want it by? Oh, 2027. And how much are you going to spend on it? Oh, a couple of million. And before you know it, they build it. The engineers, they're the guys, they're the ones. We're going to have the Mars globe in Peel Cathedral shortly. Do you know there are two vehicles driving around Mars today? The Curiosity and the Perseverance rovers are driving around Mars today. They haven't been serviced. They haven't had their tyres blown up. They haven't had petrol put in them. But they're still working years down the road. The original rovers, Spirit and Opportunity, were meant to last for 3 months. One lasted for 7 years. The other lasted for 15.
But we've talked about other pieces of space engineering, as might say, that have well lived past their way projected sell-by date.
Very much so. And that's one of the beauties of it. Because when you launch into space, of course, there's nothing to make it decay. There's no wind. There's no erosion. There's no water. And unless there's a meteorite hits it, which is highly unlikely because space is very empty, the word space is very well defined, you're going to be okay.
Now, we're straying into space and we haven't finished with the Manx sky for the next weeks. So, have we had any aurora activity?
We've had quite a bit of aurora activity. I've been saying for some time that we're going to get more aurora activity after the solar peak, which was the middle of last year. And there's been some wonderful pictures by viewers in the Isle of Man of the aurora. Only last weekend there was pictures of the aurora put on the Facebook. Again, you've got to have a clear sky. There's lots of apps. One of the best ones to look at is Aurora Watch UK. Aurora Watch UK. UK, which is ironically based in Lancaster. It's only just over the water from us. And they publish results of the KP index. The KP index, nothing to do with the nuts. The KP index, it's a German term, but basically the normal aurora activity is level 1 or 2 or maybe 3. That means you're going to see aurora from places like Norway. If it goes up to 4, 5 or 6, you're going to see it from places like the Isle of Man. And if it hits 7, 8 or 9, which it did in October 24 and again in November 25, you're going to see it not just in the north, you're going to see it everywhere. We've had some very good displays recently, not as good as I've just mentioned, 7, 8 and 9s, but certainly worth seeing. The tip for anyone, if you want to see the Northern Lights from the Isle of Man, is to go to someone with a northern location. You can see the northern horizon anywhere from the Point of Ayr down to Neuchâtel, that you've got a good, clear northern horizon view. Look at the sky, take a picture with your camera on your phone, and if the picture comes out with a little bit of green in it, which is so obviously the wrong colour to see in the dark, if it's green, there's an aurora going to develop.
Right, OK, what's our next topic out of the Manx skies, Howard?
Two things I'll give you. The planet Venus, everybody noticed the planet Venus was very prominent in the morning sky the last 6 months or so. Venus went round the back of the sun on the 3rd of January. On the 3rd of January, it went round the back of the sun. It went through what we astronomers call superior conjunction. Superior conjunction of the back of the sun, inferior conjunction of the front. It went round the back of the sun. It's now re-emerging in our evening sky. So I've got a challenge for listeners. Venus will re-emerge in the sky, in the evening sky, just after the sun has gone down. It will appear to the right-hand side of the sun, or the northern side of the sun, Don't look at the sky when the sun's in it because you'll damage your eyes. Even when it's setting, you shouldn't look at the sun. But after the sun has gone down, look to the right of the sun and see if you can see the planet Venus. It's in a light sky, it'll be very difficult to see, but it will emerge quite quickly. And by mid-March, we'll talk about it again next month, by mid-March it'll be easy seen. So who's going to see Venus for the first time for me? It'll be towards the end of February, but that's a challenge for you all.
Howard Parkin at manx.net. Message him and tell him what you can see and when you saw it and where you were. We like challenges, but you did say to me before we started this, Howard, that you'd got a theme that we were going to be following.
Yeah.
Now, what's that?
We're going to look for the principal star in the summer triangle in February. It depends where we are on the Earth. We're at a latitude of 54 degrees north. There is a star in the sky called Deneb. It's the principal star, or one of the three stars of the summer triangle. So why is he talking about the summer triangle in winter? Because Deneb never sets. It goes down in the western sky as it has just disappeared relatively recently. We have the summer triangle up to about November time. We can see it clearly. But what happens is because of our latitude, it skirts the horizon. It skirts the horizon. So I want listeners to look out for the northern horizon any time when it's a good dark night and see if you can see a very bright star on the northern horizon. That star is the star Deneb. And when you've seen Deneb, keep watching it. I just did an exercise before we did the show tonight, just looking how far and how long it takes. It skirts the northern horizon. It will have gone down in the west. It'll have skirted the northwest horizon. It's now going to be more or less roughly due north, depending what time you're looking. And it will keep going along the horizon just above it. So it's only just visible. And then in about May time, it'll start to rise much, much higher, as will the other two stars, Vega and Altair, in the constellation of Aquila. So here's your other challenge. Find Deneb for me. And we'll come back to this and I'll tell you exactly where it is when we do the February show.
But the idea of something that never sets quite romantic, isn't it?
It is. And we call these stars that never set circumpolar stars, the pole star. The amount of times I watch quiz shows on the TV and they say, what's the brightest star in the sky? And 99% people say the pole star, the North Star. It isn't. It's a very faint star. But the pole star is directly above the North Pole. What does that mean to the Isle of Man? It means from the Isle of Man, the pole star is exactly due north and it's exactly the latitude of the Isle of Man above the horizon. So if you go outside and look for the pole star, find the constellation of the group of stars known as the Plough, find the pointers. I'm sure you've all done this before. If not, maybe this is another thing we'll do another time. The pole star sits directly in the same position. Just like the pole star is in the due north, the stars rotate around the pole as the circumpolar stars I've just mentioned, while the other stars, the seasonal stars, of course, will pass from east to west, like the stars of winter we were just talking about earlier.
With all that to absorb, I think we need a music break.
Well, I thought we'd do the Southern Cross by Neil Young. We just talked about the pole star. The equivalent in the Southern Hemisphere is not a star. It's not a star at the Southern Celestial Pole, to give it its proper name, but there is a group of stars known as the Southern Cross. And there's a wonderful song by Neil Young, The Southern Cross.
Town on a boat going to Southern Islands, sailing to reach before a following sea. She was making for the trades on the outside and the downhill run to Papeete. Off the wind on this heading lie the Marquesas. You got line. Nicely making way in a noisy bar in Avalon. I tried to call you, but on a midnight watch I realized why twice you ran away. Think about
how many times I have fallen. Spirits are using me. Larger voices call. I have been around the world,
you know it will. When you see the Southern Cross for the first time, you understand now why you came this way. 'Cause the truth you might be running from is so small, but it's as big as the promise of a coming day. So I'm sailing for tomorrow, my dreams are a-dying, and my love is an anchor tied to you,
tied with a silver chain.
I have my ship and all her flags are a-flying. She is all that I have left,
and music is her name. Think about how many times I have fallen. Spirits are using me, but your voice is calling. What heaven brought you and me cannot be forgotten.
And we never failed to fail. It was the easiest thing to do. You will survive being bested. Somebody fine will come along, make me forget about loving you. In the Southern Cross,
welcome back. You're listening to Howard Parkin. It is this month's edition of The Manx Sky at Night. Right, Howard, as we always do in the second part of the programme, we're out in space, out of outer space. And I suppose we need to just touch on this story about the astronaut being taken ill, the medical evacuation of the space station. It was very, very secret for a long time, wasn't it?
It was. And the whole point was, obviously, through privacy laws and medical laws and all the rest, you can't disclose things in a public forum. And that's why NASA have really been very rigid on this. But what is the great story is, people think that space is difficult to get to. And it is difficult to get. It's expensive to get to. It's a very dangerous environment. But we're humans. If something goes wrong, what can we do? And we proved it. We proved it when the two were abandoned in space, allegedly, all those months ago. They weren't, but never mind. We proved that we could do something about it. The Chinese, similarly, when they had a problem with their spacecraft, got hit by a meteorite and they had to do something with their astronauts. And now we've got four astronauts in space. NASA did not hesitate. There was an announcement that one of the crew had a problem. They couldn't deal with it on board the space station. They brought them back within a week. All four of them came back successfully. The spacecraft landed successfully. They've done a press conference about it all now. But the whole point was they managed to get them back down without any problem or any emergency.
There was only one person who had an emergency.
Yes.
But they brought the whole team down.
Yes, it had been asked that by some other people. Because basically, if you're on board the space station, they will be docked to the space station. There'll be two vehicles docked. There'll be a Russian Soyuz, which takes three people. There'll be a SpaceX Dragon, which takes four. If there's suddenly an emergency and their space station has to be evacuated, they can all get in the different spacecraft and come back down to Earth. So, one is ill. What do they do? if they put him in a spacecraft on his own or even with one other person, that would mean the other two couldn't come back down to Earth in the event of a real emergency. So the crew's mission was for 6.5 months. They were launched last August, I think it was. Their mission was for 6.5 months. They were meant to be replaced by the next SpaceX Dragon, which was launching in mid-February. So they brought them down a month early. The Chinese did exactly the same thing when their astronauts had their spacecraft was damaged, actually, and they had to come back down. They did actually do something differently. They were actually left the spacecraft with the damaged spacecraft attached, and the three people on board their space station, the Tiangong 1 space station, couldn't come back because their spacecraft was damaged. But what they could have done is put their spacesuits on and come back down with the spacesuits and the oxygen in the spacesuits, so it wouldn't have mattered if the hole in the spacecraft had vented the atmosphere.
Now, Howard, the Artemis mission, what's the latest?
Well, this is the most dramatic and exciting news in space for the last 50 years, practically. This is absolutely incredible. A week last Saturday, they rolled out the Artemis 2 rocket and spacecraft to the launch pad in Florida. This is the mission where America are returning to the moon. It really is as big as that. First time for 50 years. They set a program up in 2017 called the Artemis program. The Artemis program, Artemis is the twin sister of Apollo. That's why it's called Artemis. And the American government stated they wanted to return to the moon initially by 2024. But the boast was they were going to put a person of colour and the first woman on the moon by the mid-20s. And that is what they're doing. And this is their first launch ever of the brand new Orion spacecraft with men and women on board. The spacecraft is scheduled for launch from Florida, Cape Kennedy, roughly on the 6th of February. It'll depend on the test. They rolled the spacecraft out to the pad, as I say, a week yesterday. They're now testing everything. They're doing a full fueling test on the 3rd of February. And if that goes successfully, they're going to launch hopefully on the 6th of February. Remember we were talking about the moon and everything going around the Earth and orbits a minute ago? They've got to launch between the 6th of Feb and the 11th of Feb. If it doesn't go then, no problem. They're not going to rush into it like we were saying earlier. And what they will do, they'll make sure everything is safe and everything is done properly. What they will do is they'll move it to March when the moon is back round into the same position. You think about logic of going to the moon. You've got to launch from the Earth and arrive at where the moon will be in 3 days' time. It makes sense. You've got to rendezvous with the moon, literally. So that's what they're doing. And this crew have been training now. They were appointed back in 2022. And they finally got round to launching in, as I say, February 2026. And if this mission is successful, the next mission is meant to be a landing on the moon again. The Artemis 3 mission is meant to be a lunar landing mission.
So this one, the mission of this one, the Artemis 2, is simply to do what?
Basically, to go to the moon and back. They're going to take the spacecraft into orbit around the Earth. They're then going to leave the Earth's gravitational field, head out to the moon. They're going to do what they call a free return trajectory, using the gravity of the moon to sling them back down to the Earth, like Apollo 13 did, for those who remember the Apollo 13 story. And when they've done that, come back to Earth, make sure everything's okay. The next mission should be a landing mission. There's a big question mark about that because the landing mission depends on the SpaceX's Starship being ready, which is what they're going to go down to the lunar surface with. That is nowhere near ready yet. NASA are already talking about changing the Artemis 3 mission to a lunar orbit mission rather than a landing mission, and who knows. But it's very exciting that this next mission, this one we're launching literally in a few days' time, has got four astronauts on board. There's a Canadian, there's a lady, there's a black American and another American. And I'm very fortunate enough to have met one of them. He was on the Orion cruise ship with me back in 2018, Victor Glover. And I'm in email contact with him. He sends me his blog. I don't see he writes back to me, but he sends me his blog. And he's such a nice bloke and he's so excited about it. I know from reading his blogs. And I'm really excited to hear about it and looking forward to seeing the pictures and seeing the launch, hopefully in just a few days' time. What they have done, and the big change to what they're doing now, is they're going into spacecraft with what we call ballistic capsules. We had the space shuttle, remember, on the side of the rockets, and twice, sadly, people lost their lives because of problems with the rocket. So they've gone back to what they call a ballistic capsule. And NASA said they wanted to build a brand new ballistic capsule, similar shape to the Apollo capsule from all those years ago. In the meantime, they've been using SpaceX to go up and down to the International Space Station. This is the first American government spacecraft, the Orion spacecraft, that they're launching now since the Apollo era. Forget Dragon, because that's private, and NASA are paying for it privately. But the whole point is that the astronauts on board this mission have been very heavily involved in the design of the Orion spacecraft. And of course, it did go into orbit in 2022. It was unmanned, and they tested it, and made everything was okay then. I think, to be fair, they found a few problems, which is why it's taken 4 years to get back to launching it again with men and women on board. But they're now ready, and the rocket, as I say, was a magnificent sight, seeing it last week rolling out to the launch pad, and the astronauts were there, the four of them were there, and it's very exciting, and I can't wait to see it, and hopefully it'll be a success, and then who knows. And the latest estimate is they'll return to the moon to land. It's meant to be no earlier than 2027, which is only next year, but already they reckon that the landing vehicle isn't going to be ready, and it'll probably be 28 or possibly 29. But certainly they are committed to doing this. But you know what, Judith? One of the other things is, and the Vice President Pence made this speech in 2019, basically saying we're going to return to the moon, but this time we're going to stay. They're going to build a base. They're going to build a space station in orbit around the moon. That's being planned and designed at the moment. They're having an orbiting space station around the moon called Gateway, and the astronauts will go to Gateway and then go down to the moon's lunar surface and back. They're going to build a base on the moon, and the base on the moon will be used to mine stuff on the moon and do all sorts of research and science, with a view to eventually going to Mars. It's all part of the going to Mars. And the speech from Pence, Vice President Pence, back in 2019 is, we're going to put American boots on the surface of the moon and then go on to Mars.
And that leads me very nicely into the last thing we must mention tonight, because sadly, we've been beaten by the clock. And Mars comes to the cathedral in a matter of weeks. Another of the Luke Jerram art installations, Mars, will be in the cathedral, which will be open every day for the 7th of February onwards. The cathedral will be open every day, and there is literally a packed programme of events once again, just like when we had the moon, the Museum of the Moon in the cathedral. So I hope lots of people will pop in and take a look. Thank you very much for being with us tonight, Howard.
Absolutely.
And we look forward to welcoming you back on the final Sunday in February.
Thank you very much. Good night.
Faster Maya, Howard.
Station, Manx Radio.